Hey guys, and welcome to another edition of Happy, Sad, Confused. I'm Josh Horowitz. Thanks for tuning into my podcast here with Sammy, as always. Hey, Sammy.
Hi. Guys, we're on the road.
We are. This is very weird because like it feels a little surreal. We're sitting here talking. Usually we talk in my silly little office in New York. Mm-hmm. We're sitting on some very chic couches right now in San Diego at Comic-Con. And we're taking a quick break to record the intro from back-to-back-to-back-to-back times 1,000 interviews here for MTV.
I'm literally sitting in a spot that Alan Tudyk was sitting in, like, 45 seconds
ago. Yeah, literally about 45 seconds ago, Alan Tudyk was here.
It's warm still.
he was delightful, by the way.
Wasn't he just a dream?
He really actually was. And we should say, by the time you hear this, Comic-Con will have just ended, and hopefully we'll both still be alive.
It's not looking likely at the moment.
We're tired, but very happy, because it's been so many fun interviews, and virtually all of them are available on MTV's Facebook page. You can check them out, basically in their entirety. Really in their entirety. We're just running it all as full chunks. And so far, I mean, there'll be some more that run after this, but you have to all watch the Will Arnett one.
The life-changing for everyone Will Arnett
Which felt
interview.
Magical.
It honestly was. It will bring world peace,
yeah,
I think.
I'm going to need to bring Will in for the podcast because that was about 15 or 20 minutes of magic and I need more in my life.
Yeah, seriously. You guys have something special.
So that was fun. And peruse the MTV Facebook because there's a lot of fun stuff there. We've talked to Cara Delevingne and Dane DeHaan for Valerian.
Some big ones coming up tomorrow.
Big ones coming up. Tom Hiddleston.
Oh, baby.
It's the magic word. Every show has to come up. Mm-hmm. So check that out. And we're really proud of the stuff we've done here, but we need a rest. But on to this week's show. We're going to toss to a wonderful interview I did recently with Logan Lerman. Logan, of course, star of Perks of Being a Wallflower, the Percy Jackson films. Someone that I really think is both an exceptional actor and just like a sweet, cool guy, and also just a big old film geek. And it was fun to bring him in. And it's always fun, just like each show, each episode kind of has its own vibe and energy. Last week was Nicholas Holt, which went off the rails in the best possible way and was like 45 minutes of like stupidity and insanity and fun. And
you bring that out in people.
Well, maybe. But no, I was going to say this week with Logan is a really like thoughtful, deep conversation about like the state of film and studio movies and franchises and like all the kind of like, frankly, stuff that like that someone like Logan is trying to like resist, even having done some studio stuff. And he's really, really frank and open about the kind of choices he has to make as an actor and the kind of material he's offered. And yeah, that's all you can ask for in an interview subject. Someone as like open as that.
I feel like Logan's an old soul.
Totally. Seriously. Like I met him a few years ago. We talk about it in the podcast when he was kind of like just, I think he had just done Percy or he was about to do Percy. And I clicked with him immediately. Like we were like, he's much younger than me because I'm 95 years old, but we have like very similar film tastes. And he's someone that I always love geeking out with. So
I feel like he'll win an Oscar one day.
Yeah, he's a great actor. Yeah. And if you haven't seen Perks of Being a Wallflower, for instance, check it out. That's an underseen film that he's great in, and Emma Watson and of course Ezra
Dream
Miller.
Team.
Yeah, exactly. So that's coming up. I do want to say this isn't going to affect anyone listening to the podcast, but a little bit of a changing the guard. This is the last episode of Happy, Sad, Confused under the Earwolf banner, and there's no ill will or badness. The good news is that Happy, Sad, Confused is continuing. MTV's podcast network, which has launched, is going to be kind of taking over Happy, Sad, Confused. As you know, that's my day job, is working at MTV. And it was just kind of a natural progression. So it's going to end up as part of MTV. You're not going to really honestly notice a difference. It's going to be the same feed, et cetera. So don't change anything in your life. But I did want to take this opportunity to thank the great folks at Earwolf, in particular, Paul Scheer, who made my day when he came to me and said, I love your podcast, which I had been self-producing. I wanted to be part of Wolf Pop and Earwolf. And he's been nothing but awesome to me. And Adam Sachs at Earwolf and Chris Bannon and the whole crew that have helped in terms of making it sound
God.
Way much. God. Well, thank Jesus, God, everybody.
No, but got you.
But in all seriousness, they've really helped and made this show sound great, much better than I could ever do it, since I know nothing about anything technological. Mm-hmm. So thanks to those guys. Happy Sag Infused. We'll just continue and get bigger and better and sillier and
she'll
dumber.
Live on.
Yes, it will never die. So yes.
You said it won't have a difference moving to MTV, but actually the only difference is it's now hosted by Tyga instead of Josh Horowitz.
Exactly.
So content-wise won't be too different, but no, the voice might sound different.
We're co-hosting. I have a meet and greet with Tyga this week. We're going to see how it goes. First, he's going to have to tell me what he...
The chemistry test.
He's going to ask me what songs he sings, and I'm just going to stare at him blankly. Yeah. It is a he, right? It's a man?
Yes.
Okay. See, I don't know.
I know.
Don't tell anybody at MTV that I don't know who Tyga is.
It's fair.
Movies, guys.
Makes you special.
I like movies. Enough chit-chat. We've got some San Diego Comic-Con-ness to get to, but I hope you guys enjoy this episode with the delightful Logan Werman.
Double L.
Double L in the house. Bye. Let's talk.
I'm off and running.
I'm just taking in your office still. I'm sorry. I'll stop looking
no,
around.
No, this is a hallmark.
It says a lot about a person, you know, when
definitely.
You walk into their office.
What you choose to put on your wall.
Yeah, it says a lot. I think, it's all cool shit. I think, you know, we're cut from the same cloth.
I was going to say, I think our, I don't know if you remember, it was special for me, probably meaningless to you and what? Your busy life. Our first meeting, as I recall, was in kind of an anonymous office at MTV. I don't even know when it was, if it was pre-Percy Jackson or what. Probably was.
Was it pre-Percy Jackson?
Maybe it was.
I think it was around that time.
Yeah.
Because I do remember at the Times Square office there.
Exactly.
Which is kind of nice. You guys aren't there anymore.
Yeah, it's really nice that we're not there anymore.
I mean, like, sure, Times Square is great, but it's like a bitch to get to.
Yeah.
And overwhelming. Just extremely overwhelming.
Yeah, the only thing, I mean, I'm...
Sensory overload when you're
That's
there.
Exactly how to put it. I always say, like, that last, like, 3 or 4 blocks of my commute to Times Square turned me into, like, the worst version of myself. Like,
yeah,
I was, like,
you had to do it every day, like, all the time. Not every day, but, like, all the time.
Yeah,
it's insane. Most days.
It's amazing I'm as charming as I still am.
Yeah, dude, you must be much, much happier.
Much, much, much happier. Can you see the weight lifted off my shoulders?
Yeah. I can, there's an energy of just... you know, comfort. How long have you been here in this office now?
About 2 years now.
All right.
So I'm glad we finally got
you
down
I didn't
here.
Realize it's been that long.
Okay. Yeah, it's all good. No, but I was going to say, like, I truly do remember that meeting because I don't know if I'd seen you in anything. I'd probably seen 3:10 to Yuma by then. Yeah, but I remember, there's a pretty significant age difference between the two of us. But I remember, like, the third person in that meeting was, like, the head of, like, MTV Talent. And afterwards was like, you and Logan really got along crazy well. Like, your reference, you were, like, speaking the same language. It was, like, almost bizarre. And I'm like, yeah, I'm, like, 15 years older than him. Yeah. But, like, we basically have the same brain.
You know, it's it's funny. You know, you just meet people sometimes, and especially when we're both film people. We like movies and stuff. And
yeah.
It's easy to get along. It's a shame when you meet someone like in your position or if you meet someone in my position and they can't clearly really.
Don't speak the language or don't,
they don't
really
speak
care.
The language, they don't really care.
Yeah.
It's kind of a shame.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I mean, it comes through in our conversations and also conversations I've seen you have with others where, like, it sounds like you're just thrilled to be part of this whole process and be I mean, you grew up with this stuff, just loving the stuff, obviously making the stuff, but you're as much a fan of it as a participant in it, it seems.
Totally. Yeah.
Has being in the business, as it were, changed your appreciation? Like, does knowing how the sausage is made ruin your appreciation of film at all?
I don't think it ruins it. I just have a different perspective on the process. I actually think that if anything, it's made me more forgiving of mediocre films.
Totally,
because they're so
you know how much
hard
into
to make.
It. Yeah, it's happened to everybody. Yeah.
It's always a labor of love for someone, a part of it. But it's hard to make a good movie, and I think knowing the ins and outs and the politics of a business definitely make it a little, because there's always positives, but there's negatives as well, you know, and the decisions why some movies are made.
Right.
and the, you know, yeah, the process and the politics behind decision making. I think particularly in the studio world.
Yes.
Especially right now, where everything is so repetitive and boring.
Yeah.
Most studio films are repetitive and boring, you know. But I understand it's business. There's other, you know, there's reasons for, yeah, I guess, the approach that some studios have to towards what they're going to invest in any given year. And I respect that process, but it's also just frustrating to see that there's not a lot of original film, a lot of opportunity for original filmmaking in the studio yeah, world.
It is a strange time we're living in, where like, and I appreciate television as much as the next guy. I watch a ton of great shows, and there's too much, in fact, to watch.
Yeah.
But, you know, my first love, and I would assume yours, is like that, like there's something in that 2-hour format, yeah, roughly give or take, that projection on a big screen.
Yeah, it's
that we don't want to lose.
It's important to me, and I don't think that we're going to lose it, because, I mean, I don't know. I mean, maybe we will. I don't know the perspective of the youngins nowadays, you know, the people being born into this world where we have streaming services and virtual reality and Instagram videos and Instagram stars. I don't know if I hope that that generation is still going to want to go to see movies, yeah, you know, 10 years from now, 20 years from now.
I mean, it's interesting. I mean, do you feel a disconnect from your generation in a way? Because you are part of that, like age-wise, part of that, yeah, generation.
No, I'm a part of the turning point in that.
Yeah.
I really, I was right as it was all changing, yeah, you know, I grew up, you know, half of my childhood without the internet, really. You know, right, what I mean? Right. Like a good point. You know what I mean? Like, then it all just started
unfolding.
There certainly
weren't like Vine stars and YouTube stars until
I'm a little late. You know, I'm past that generation. You know, I'm 24, so yeah, I have a little bit of an old school love for filmmaking and the way it's presented to me, you know, was presented to me, and it still is,
yeah,
presented. That I'm passionate about. I think that the movie theater experience is important, but at the same time, I still like, you know, what's happening, you know, right now.
Sure.
And there's different platforms for films and television shows, and that's fine. That's cool. But I still want there to be movies and movie, yeah, theaters, and I want films to be shot on film and, you know, good projection and all those things. But, it's a shame that a lot of the films that end up in theaters are studio films, and those studio films are just so formulaic and business driven. It's just a bunch of executives sitting in their offices going, what properties, and they refer to their films as properties and
IP
titles,
yeah,
do we have that we can, you know, reformat and tackle or whatever this year. And
yeah,
it's also repetitive. I'm sick of all these superhero films, all this stupid shit. I mean, some of, you know, every now and then you're surprised by one, but most of the time it's just a remake of the same thing you saw last year. And it's kind of hypnotizing. You still want to go and see it, and you're curious about it,
right,
and it's fun, you know, bang, bang action stuff, but I crave a little bit. I crave something a film that's going to surprise me.
Yeah.
And I feel bad for the writers and directors that, you know, aren't being championed and aren't being supported when, yeah, they probably have a great idea.
When I also am, you know, of two minds of it, where like there's these amazing filmmakers that I respect, and I wear both hats, because, like, you know,
I'm totally a geek and a fanboy, and I grew up with superheroes and like to see like them realize is cool. But at the same time, like I sometimes like I feel like I'll give this as an example. Like, you know, you worked with James Mangold, who you know obviously he did 3 to 10 to Yuma, was amazing. That itself a remake, but worked. Like I love that he did Wolverine. It was a good movie, and I'm kind of I think it's cool he's doing another Wolverine. Yeah. But at the same time, it's like, I kind of want to see what that guy does on his own. Like it's a hard,
it's really difficult. And it's really difficult. I mean, you know, films are being sold to audiences based on their source material.
Right.
And the fan base regarding the characters.
Right.
Whether it came from a comic book or an animated series or an old successful TV show, whatever the fuck it is. But, you know, we used to have movie stars, you know?
Yeah.
And that would justify the development and financing of an original idea.
Yeah.
Because you have Brad Pitt starring in it. Yeah, and you know people are going to go see it for him.
Yes.
But now the industry is trying to eliminate the movie star, you know?
Yeah.
And therefore, they're becoming, for business, so reliant on the character or the source material's fan base rather than building an actor's fan base, which would then also support original
quirky,
ideas.
Bizarre ideas that, yeah, that hit and or miss and whatever. Yeah.
And it's like, you know, whatever. Screw it. Independent film world is awesome right now, and there's so many good movies being made. It's just no one's getting paid to do them.
Right.
And everybody is suffering it's just it's hard to make a living making independent films, but...
Well, look,
everything's changing. Everything's so complicated.
We'll turn the sad conversation around in a second about the happiness.
There's a silver lining. There's great movies coming.
There is, including, and we're going to talk about yours, which you know I'm a fan of.
Thank you.
But I'm curious, like, as that relates to your career, with our conversation, the first, like, 10 minutes, like, you know, Percy Jackson, obviously, you know, IP right there.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we talked about you were up for Han Solo and Spider-Man, all you go up for all that stuff, like, totally, you should. I mean,
I'm not going to say no to them if they gave me an opportunity, because those things, those opportunities, you know, they could be a great movie. You never know.
Yeah.
I mean, it all depends on, like, filmmaker and those things. But even then, I would, being a part of that type of film gives you a thing called this, like, international value for financiers, which it comes down to this whole market, which I'm sure you're already familiar with, you know, right? But I'll explain it. But, you know, about, you know, different countries. And if you're an actor, if you have value in a certain country, then the theater owners of that country are going to invest in your film,
right?
Independent film, whatever it is. Based off of your value in that country, and then you can get your film financed through this, like, group funding of movie theater owners and financiers. And doing a film like, you know, like a la, you know, Spider-Man, Han Solo stuff allows you as an actor to then have the ability to greenlight films that you want to make.
Yeah.
Which doesn't mean you have the talent to attract a filmmaker to give you the opportunity, but it gives you an edge over everyone else. Like, you have more value, therefore, you know, you have more of you know, you're at the top of the list in terms of getting the film made, and it's strategic for the filmmaker to get you involved, and it's a good position to be in. That said, now they're, you know, these studios are only investing in these characters like Han Solo and those stuff, you know, and therefore they make you sign like 7-picture deal.
So you want time to actually do anything.
You want time to do anything. So it's almost like it's not worth it anymore. You know, I mean, to do something like that, unless you really just want to be doing one thing for the rest of your career. And it's hard to find time in between, because you shoot the film and then you're promoting it, and then you're getting ready for the next one you're going to be a part of.
Yeah.
And then there's, it's not creatively satisfying.
Well, and also, like, I mean, when you go in for
some
of these,
make a lot of money, and great, isn't that wonderful?
But like, and when you go in even for like a reading or like an audition, don't you even have to sometimes sign a contract that like if they choose you, like you basically signed on?
Oh yeah.
Before you even go in for an audition,
it's a really sick thing. I think it's kind of odd. Yeah. You as an actor for like a screen test, you sign a contract that says, this is what you're going to be making, and all the specific definitions of your contract are already worked out with your lawyer and the studio, and how many pictures, how many movies you're going to, you know, this contract is good for, and then you sign it, therefore you're attached to it, and then the studio has the choice whether, you know, between who they want to pick. You know what I mean? It's right. Like,
no power
it's
for you.
Not
it's
not like
all
yeah, it's, yep. It's a, yeah, it's really a flawed system for actors, and it's yeah, but it's an ever evolving, you know, industry, and you just gotta find ways to make it work out better for all parties.
Well, and segueing into like the business and the business of independent film, Indignation is a great film, first of all.
Thank you.
And some superb performances from you and Sarah Gaydon and Tracy Letts and Philip Roth book, great source material. James Sheamus, first directing effort. It's got a great pedigree and it works.
Yeah, it's I really had no expectations with it in terms of like if it would end up in theaters or not, and it did, and I'm really proud of it, and people seem to like it, which is cool. It's just different from, the formulaic shit that's out there. And I'm proud to be contributing to those films at this time and in the film industry. And I think, I hope people go see it. You know, I really don't know if they will. I really hope they do.
I think it'll find an audience. I mean, I think hopefully the reviews and the word of mouth and hey, your name will help get
maybe.
It out there.
I hope so.
What in a nutshell, what's the attraction of material like this? Because you're also an EP on this, we should say. This is your first, congratulations. You're an executive producer, which is awesome.
Thank you. I mean, the strength of the writing attracted me to the material. It's a beautifully written script. It's entertaining for sure for me. Like, I was entertained reading it, and I thought it could be an entertaining movie, but it also had bold choices and rich, well-defined characters.
Right.
And in particular, there's this one scene in the middle of the movie where... Well, so basically, should I like summarize the film a little bit?
Let's give them a little bit. So 1951, right?
Yeah, it's 1951, like, and the movie's about this young, opinionated dude who is attending a conservative college far away from home, and he kind of is at odds with the administration and falls in love with a troubled girl and whatnot, and there's this beautiful scene in the middle of the script that's incredibly long and intense, and there's this like battle of sorts, this verbal battle between the dean of this college and my character. And it's just
how long
epic.
Does it last? Because I mean, this is what I sent you a note about this, because it's amazing. It's an amazing sequence.
I know that when we were shooting it, they were about 20-minute takes, but I think it's around like 18-minute scene or something like that. And it's just epic. And
yeah, it's like the action set piece. If you were doing a Transformers movie, this is like the set piece of the film.
Yeah, this is like the big action scene in a way,
and richly rewarding from an audience perspective. Because like as I'm watching it, I'm like, I don't know. I didn't know the format. I hadn't read the book. I didn't know reading the script, obviously. So I didn't know when this was ending. And like, it just builds, and it's just so richly satisfying to see, hear dialogue like this, and see two performers of different generations like battle it out and in an intellectual discussion. It's just and each is right in their own way. And it's great.
Yeah, it's a really killer scene, and it really I guess it was one of the most attractive elements of the script, you know. And after reading the script, I got it sent to me. I read it. I met with our director the next day, And we just started working on it, you know, it just kind of happened. And I was just excited to do something that was different than everything else that I was reading out there,
right,
that had real substance and something that I want to see. And I think other people would want to see. And yeah, it's just nice. I mean, it's terrifying though at the same time, you know.
Do you shoot it all in one take?
It's scary.
Or do you?
Yeah. We went, we didn't, you know, break it up.
Yeah.
You know, we would do 20-minute takes, and it would be the whole thing. We'd run through it each time. And, yeah, it was really epic and terrifying and, really fulfilling at the end of the day to get through it and,
sure,
you know, not screw up. So I think it's worth seeing.
Definitely.
Like the movie is worth seeing for that scene almost, yeah, alone. You can just go for that and have a great time, but there's a lot more that the film has to offer too.
I know that you generally aren't, you're one of those actors that isn't itching to watch their own work generally.
Yeah.
But you're an EP on this. So I would assume you have to kind of see this one.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I've seen it. And you know what? I didn't have a problem with it. You know, it's not that I have a problem with watching myself. I mean, I guess I do a little bit. I mean, it's just that, you know, a lot of the work that I've done lately has been pretty intense work, I guess. And when I'm working, I try to give as much of myself to the film as possible and feel as much as I can and just be present.
Yeah.
And when I'm watching a film like this, which is an intense film where I had to be very vulnerable and whatnot, when I'm watching it, I'm like flooded with that same stress I felt on the day.
Sure, exactly.
And it's hard to watch
all the rough stuff comes out. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't want to like watch myself. I don't know. It's like, you know, you don't want to watch video of yourself crying. It's like, why would you want to do that?
Right.
It's uncomfortable, especially in a theater with other people. Yeah. But I was able to remove myself from this one, and I enjoyed seeing it. I got talked into it. I got this whole pep talk from our producer and my good friend, Anthony Bregman. And he gave me, I was going to skip out watching the film when we were at Sundance.
Right.
And he gave me this whole speech, this beautiful speech, this like, you know, total like McConaughey, you know, like talking
Wolf
to
Wall Street.
Yeah,
kind of thing,
yeah. Yeah. Like this, like, you know, that football movie he did, whatever, you know,
oh,
like
we are Marshall,
total,
yeah,
like,
yeah,
like, you know, Kurt Russell, you know, miracle moment where he's like, you gotta do it. And inspired me to sit down and watch it. And I really enjoyed it. And I'm glad I stayed to watch. I think I'm going to try to do that more often.
Yeah.
And not, you know, be so self-serious. And
well,
just,
you can't,
like,
can't deny yourself the opportunity of watching yourself perform your first orgasm on screen.
Yeah, yeah. It's funny. Like, that was funny, man. Like, you know, the O face or whatever.
That seems the worst. I mean, there.
I've never had to do research before where I'm like looking at myself having an orgasm, trying to figure out how to do this on camera. It was like a weird weird amount of research you have to do for something.
Do
like
I want
that.
To get more details on this?
We
on
can
what,
talk about
what,
it. If
what
you
is
want.
What is the research?
Some of it I can't talk about, but I actually, you know, I had to like, you know, I wanted to know. I needed to really. I know, you know, you don't like think about, you know, how you are, like what your face looks like and things like that. You don't think about that when you're in a moment.
Sure.
Naturally, you know, if you're having an orgasm or whatnot. So I had to be more aware and present during my own so that I could do it justice on camera and watch movies where they do it. But they literally have this like shot where it like zooms in like really close on like right into my eyeball watching me come, and it's really quite intimidating. You know, it's like an intimidating day, you know, when you're approaching that. It's like, shit, I have to learn how to do this, you know, on camera. It's so weird, man.
The saddest thing is I can actually sadly relate to this because this dovetails with both parts of our conversation thus far, the orgasm discussion and the commercialism aspect, because I had to once do a MTV promo, like an actual like paid advertisement for a gum, a gum, and the slogan was like masticating. It was like that was their thing.
Okay,
so I had to pretend to be like basically getting off on chewing gum.
Yeah.
It was the worst day of my life.
And you want to do it? You want to do it right? You know? I don't know. It's like I was like thinking like, how do you really? You know, what do I do? Or like, what is it like? And it's weird to pay attention to it like that. But yeah, it's so odd. But I came on camera a bunch of times. A bunch of times.
It's good. Eat your heart out, Daniel Day-Lewis.
Yeah. There we go. Check out
the Did he do that in Lincoln? I didn't see that scene.
You know, I believe it's in the director's extended cut. Yeah.
The extended cut. Talking about the unrated Lincoln cut.
Yeah. Hey, you know, Lincoln was a freak, man.
Yeah.
A freak. I don't talk about
Mary Todd?
Yeah.
Oh my God. Crazy.
Some good inspiration for everyone's late night activities.
you alluded to, you know, like some tough roles. My sense is in one of like the last, on camera interviews I think we did was for Fury. And you took a little break after that. Mm-hmm. My sense is that film maybe broke you a little bit.
Oh, totally. Yeah, no, I was really exhausted and I gave a lot of myself to that movie. And at the end of it, I was just like, I wasn't inspired.
Yeah.
You know, I just kind of didn't feel like working. I just in film at all. I was like, I didn't know. I mean, no, not in film. I didn't feel like being an actor. I really wasn't sure. I just needed to find myself. But it's not like I just took time off. I did have work to do because once I was done, I had to do a press tour for Noah because Noah was coming out. And then I had a bunch of months off and then enjoyed myself and traveled a little bit and then had to do press for Fury later on that year. So there was still work going on.
Yeah.
It's not like I was completely off, but I didn't, you know, jump onto another film for a while until Indignation. And I'm kind of regretting it.
Really?
Because I was attached. I was working on this film that turned out to be so fucking good. And it was so stupid of me because I've always wanted to make a film like that. And I fucked up. Like,
wait, do we not want to name this?
I would love to name it, but I want to be respectful to the people involved. And they made a great movie and it was very good. It came out this year and it was great.
Okay. And as a film buff, I know like Air is infamous for creating like tough sets and that's part of his process and people get off on it and enjoy it and the product is usually great. Mm-hmm. But like, can you elaborate a little bit on like what it was that disheartened you so much? I mean, you were proud of it, I think, and you enjoyed the process in some way. Maybe enjoy is the wrong word, but
I was proud of it. I was fulfilled. It was every film is an experiment. You know, or at least it should be, unless you're just repeating yourself. And I don't feel like I've repeated any process. And for this one, I was like, all right, let's see what happens when you give this much of yourself to one thing. And it was just exhausting.
Yeah.
And David just kind of tortures you. That's like his thing. He likes to torture people. It's David Ayer. Like, I'm sure you read about it all the time or whatever. You see all these articles about crazy shit he does to actors because he's a sick dude. And I just gave myself to him and to his process and I was exhausted. I was really tired.
Yeah.
I was just tired. I just wanted to be inspired again. I want to respect the filmmaker by being inspired. You know what I mean? By being passionate. I'm not trying to just be a part of their movie because I can be. I want them to have an inspired actor who's going to do something and respect their material. So it's like, that's why after Indignation, after Fury, I was working on this film, but I just wasn't feeling like 100%.
Yeah.
So I wanted to respect the filmmaker. So it was a choice for their movie to have, get something good out of a hungrier person.
So it was part of like the kind of process or decision making going forward, like as much as loving the project and the script and whatever, like doing your homework and figuring out like before you set on set that first day that like you're obviously in sync with the director, but also that like, like Kubrick was like infamous. Mm-hmm. Not every like, or Malick. I mean, they're not everyone's cup of tea. Like they make amazing films, but some people doesn't work for them. And maybe some filmmakers just aren't for you.
Yeah.
Or good for your soul, even if they make good movies.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I don't really care about what they do to me. I'm willing to experiment. I'm down for anything as long as I like the character and the material and the filmmaker. That being said, like, the first thing I look for is the filmmaker, and like, I just want to work with I want to aid, you know, and collaborate with a director I love.
Yeah.
That being said, there never are directors that I love that are making films that there is like a role for me in it. And I'd much rather work with a first time filmmaker that has a killer vision or short film or whatnot,
yeah,
a great script, a great story that they are trying to, like, I would like to support a first timer more so than a mediocre,
yeah,
you know,
yes,
filmmaker with average material.
What about like, I know it was, I feel like I was talking to you too through the process, or when you got the role, like Noah getting to work with Aronofsky, who's again,
yeah,
not necessarily like touchy feely or easy as a filmmaker, but
no,
like is clearly a genius behind the camera.
I love Darren, and like, he's a good friend of mine now. And that experience was cool. I mean, I wasn't very involved. We didn't really dive deep into conversation about it. The process was a little underwhelming for me, compared to other experiences I've had where I'm more involved and there's more passion and
was it just there wasn't that much to that character?
No,
really,
it was also just timing. I was working on another project and I flew in and like started the movie right away.
Right.
We didn't have a lot of time to really fully realize, or I didn't. Darren was doing his thing. He's passionate and working on it. But I think we all just kind of flew in and did our thing. I was, I wasn't as involved in that process. I was mainly like insurance.
Mm-hmm.
I was backup. I was there every day sitting around, waiting around in case they needed someone to come in, because there were obstacles when making that film.
I see.
And
you were the
cover set, and but I was also, you know, important character, and there was a lot going on. But it was it wasn't, you know, the experience I would love to have had with Darren.
Sure.
Although I have so much respect for him, and I really want to work with him again, but on something where maybe there's less elements. You know, there's less. You know, it's not as big. It's more about, we can really just focus on the characters,
yeah,
and have more time to explore. Because I never really had a lot of time to explore with Darren.
Right.
And
you want that wrestler experience. You want that kind of.
Yeah,
like,
I just want to live and breathe one thing and,
yeah,
and do that. But, you know, I love Darren and I like the movie a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But, it wasn't that, you know, it wasn't that like collaborative, and wasn't, you know, like the other experiences I've had since.
Are you consuming a lot of film? What's the last couple things you liked?
I've seen a few things. There's a bunch I want to see, but it's hard because none of my friends wanted to see these films.
What do you want to see?
I want to see Captain Fantastic.
Oh, I haven't seen it yet. The Vigo's supposed to be great in that.
Yeah. I want to see that a lot. Really want to see that. I want to see, what was the other one that, it's a bunch of films that came out. Is that Zappa documentary I want to see?
I haven't seen that yet either, yeah.
I
keep talking about, so I had Nicholas Refn in here recently.
Neon Demon. Yeah. I haven't seen that yet. I really want to see it.
I'm one of the supporters. I really like that. I know it's divisive.
Interesting. Yeah, I've heard, you know, it's polarizing, but like, I'm a big fan of Refn, and I just worked with Elle Fanning.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And
she's
like,
great, yeah.
Obsessed with her.
Yeah.
I think she's just one of my favorite people. And I just absolutely adore her as a person, but as an actor, she's like so great. And, I just love Elle. She's great. So I really want to see that. And I saw this, De Palma documentary I really liked.
Me too, yeah.
Yeah, it was good. It was interesting.
I mean, I grew up a De Palma freak.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, he's got his issues. I mean, you can definitely make some cases in terms of depictions of women maybe back in the day, etc.
But it's fascinating. Yeah, it's fascinating insight into his experience. I feel like it could have been 5 hours longer.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
and there's more details. you know, more things I'd like to learn from him. But it kind of reminded me of like the documentary version, or, you know, it's very similar to Sidney Lumet's Making Movies.
Making Movies, that infamous book. That
yeah, you know, it's like that's the one book you should read if you're interested in film.
Yeah.
Making Movies by Sidney Lumet. But it's kind of like this is the documentary version of that, but it's just not as rich. It's not as, you know, detailed.
Yeah.
But it's great insight into his filmmaking experiences. And the best thing about someone like De Palma or like Lumet is that they're prolific and they are filmmakers that aren't like Kubrick. You know, they're not like, they didn't succeed every time. They're not perfect.
Right.
They made mistakes. And to listen to De Palma or read, you know, Lumet's book, you as a aspiring filmmaker or whatnot can learn from their mistakes.
Yeah.
And I think that's really important. But yeah, he gives great insight, De Palma, into the making of a lot of his, of his films. Yeah, it's really fun. It's funny to hear him talk about it because he's
so really dry and like
loves talking about it too. You know, he really loves it.
Yeah, they had a retrospective of him at this New York theater, the Metrograph, that showed all his films, and I saw Blowout up there, which was amazing.
So good, man.
Yeah, so good.
So good. I just discovered that recently. Like, I didn't watch that like growing up. It's amazing. Anything. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So what? So who passed down, if any? But did someone pass down like the love of film? Because your family isn't like an industry family. No. You grew up in LA, but it's not like you were.
Well, my family introduced me to films at a young age, but not a lot of movies. I think my love of film really started in, it was 2004. I saw Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, and I think I just fed off of my enthusiasm mixed with my best friend's enthusiasm for film, and he would show me films, I would show him films, and we just kind of shared this passion. So I think a lot of it has to do with my best friend. He taught me a lot too, my best friend, my buddy. You know, he was already making short films, and I had no idea how you get the information from the camera onto a computer. I didn't understand what a firewire was. You know, I had to like learn these things, and I just started exploring, and then working on sets, I was able to learn more from the department heads and things like that. I also had like a neighbor growing up who's a writer, and I used to bother him all the time. And his name's Andrew Mirisch, and his father is, you know, Walter Mirisch, who the great Mirisch Company made all these wonderful movies.
Oh, wow.
And he would give me all these titles of movies to watch and talk to me and like teach me about, you know, film at like a young age, because I was curious, but he was always like not encouraging, you know. He was like, don't do it. Kind of thing, you know, it's like you shouldn't be a child actor, all these things. It's like you're never going to succeed, it's bad stuff. You know, he's just kind of like, he wasn't very encouraging about it, but he taught me so much at an early stage. So I'd say it was a combination of him and my best friend, Dean. And we would, just started learning about film and watching movies all the time. That's the thing, though, it's like, it's not forced, you know.
Right.
It's a genuine, just like wanting to, and a genuine interest, you know, wanting a passion for just wanting to watch a movie tonight. It's not like, you know, I had to force myself to be interested and want to do this. It's just what I like to do.
Yeah, I think for any, like, you know, someone that's caught the bug like you or I in terms of loving film at a young age, like it's those moments. Like I you know, we all have them. Like I remember indelibly, like, getting the double VHS when I was a kid of like Godfather and being like, it was like, wait, no one told me about this. Like, I need to watch everything this guy has ever made, and just falling down that rabbit hole. And it's not schoolwork. It's a passion that like you can't.
Yeah. And then you watch Jack and you're like, what the fuck? What the fuck is this?
That's true. That was misguided. And now the Bill Cosby part of it just adds a whole nother level to it.
Weird movie, man. But how did he go from?
But you're talking, like these wild
Apocalypse
swings
now to Jack.
I always loved that. I kind of love, like, I mean, like talking like De Palma. Like I saw like Bonfire of the Vanities in the theater. Like I love kind of like those big swing and misses as much as the glorious wins in some way.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah. Yeah, they're fun. I mean, sometimes they're fun. Not Jack. Jack not wasn't Jack. As much fun.
Guys, don't see Jack.
Although, you know, it's always a joy to watch, you know, Robin Williams do his thing. Because
totally.
Even in a bad movie like that,
yeah.
He's so damn good.
Yeah.
Undeniably good. And it's very rare that an actor can be better than the movie. You know, it's so rare. Because usually you're only as good as the film and what the director chooses and to use and yada yada yada, and I think he was one of those rare talents where he's great in everything he does. Only a few people like that.
Totally. It feels like, I mean, as self-critical as it sounds like you can sometimes be, you have to be satisfied with the resume thus far, and that like you've by and large, like especially for a guy your age, like you've avoided like teenage crap basically. Like there's a lot
for the most part I've done some shitty work though, but I think I learned more about myself through the shitty work than I did from the projects I appreciate.
Do you learn much going through you know, again, we started our conversation on the commercial aspect of going through the Percy Jackson kind of machine, whatever you want to call
it. I love that experience, man. I learned a lot.
Yeah.
I learned a lot, and I really liked that. Like, it was fun. It was a fun time. I wasn't taking it too seriously in terms of what we were making, you know? That's just fun, but it's a challenging film to make for different reasons. It's a really physically challenging process.
Working with the effects and just
like all the stunts. You have to prep for stunts and do work out every day and like learn fight sequences and like wire work and sword fighting and all that stuff. Like that's hard. Like that's the job.
Yeah.
More than acting. Although, you know, it's really just, you know, it's not many complex emotions and, you know, exploring the human condition in a film like Percy Jackson, but there's a whole hell of a lot of entertainment. I like to be entertained as well. Like I like those movies as well, but you know, I definitely was craving something more, you know, after doing that. Well, especially when you're working on those for like a long time, you kind of crave. I always crave to switch things up. Like I just want to do different things and stuff.
It feels like you're owed or we're owed a Logan Lerman comedy at some point.
I want one so bad, but there's nothing good, man. I haven't read a good. No, I just read a good comedy that I kind of like that I would consider doing. Maybe it's all about the people involved too.
Yeah,
I think that's a big part. And seeing yourself complimenting the material or whatnot. Like I'm not the funny guy really.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like you need a nice pairing.
Yeah.
It's a nice pairing. I don't think anybody's going to be laughing the whole time with me being like, you know, the, you know, broad, whatever, you know, big character or whatnot. But
there's joy in being the straight man. There's a,
yeah, I can't do another fucking intense movie. I really, I mean, I can, but I want to switch it up.
Yeah.
Really bad. And, but you can't really choose what's out there, you know. I mean, you can't choose, you know, what you're going to receive. You can't, you know, manifest it or whatnot.
Yeah.
I just, I just want more people to write and send it my way.
There's a lot of, again, like talking about different mediums. I feel like the in the comedy space, the best stuff right now is like short form and digital and like that kind of a thing. And
I mean, there's so much good stuff. I don't know. Comedy's great. I mean, there's a lot of great comedy out there. Yeah. A lot of good stuff. I'd love to find something out there that's totally different than what I've been doing recently.
Yeah.
A lot of the work I've done has been really intense and it's like, those aren't fun to work on, you know?
Right.
Not that work needs to be fun.
No, sure. It's a job for a reason.
A job, yeah. It's like, yeah, but I like these projects still.
How soon am I going to see you directing? You think?
I don't know. I mean, I want to do it. It's just, again, it's about having
finances and all that.
It's just about material.
Yeah.
It's just like if I can get my hands on something that I want to make, then I'll work every day until, you know, getting that film into production and do it as structured as well as I can with the knowledge I have of filmmaking so far. And I'm ready to do it right now. I'm always looking for material. I'm trying to motivate myself to write more, but I'm not a writer. I'm not a natural writer in this in the same way that I'm like a natural musician or something like that, where it's like it's not a chore for me to sit by a piano and want to learn more.
Yeah,
it's a chore for me to sit and write. it's painful and I hate it, but I'm trying to challenge myself because it's hard to find good material and I have ideas and things I want to do, but I just don't really know how to execute them very well. But I'm always reading and trying to find scripts. I just want to, really more than anything, I just want to find a writer, a young writer. They don't need to be young, but they could be older and start writing whatever the fuck it is. A new writer, a writer that is starting, that wants to make great movies. It's and their talent is obvious on the page, and I want to support them.
Yeah.
More than anything, not even as like trying to take their material and direct it. I just want to find good writers and make sure that they're being taken care of and that their films are being made with the respect that the material deserves. And that's all that I'm doing right now. And just trying to seek out those talented individuals and support them, because there's not enough good material out there. And
right.
Just send it my way, guys. I'm reading everything.
It's always good to catch up with you, man.
Yeah, and likewise, dude.
You know, it's always been refreshing to catch up with you, because, you know, you've got your priorities seemingly very straight. And like, you know, for someone your age, like, you know, you're attracted to good material. You're not after the quick fix. It's not about celebrity, all that shit. You know, you talk the talk and you walk the walk. So
thank
I appreciate
you very
that,
much,
man.
I appreciate that. You've always been, it's always good seeing you. You're a good dude.
Indignation, guys. Go check it out.
Yeah, check out Indignation. Please.
Please.
Yeah.
Thanks, man.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, bud.
Hey everyone, this is Scott Aukerman of Comedy Bang Bang. I want to tell you that Now Hear This is a brand new podcast festival that's happening this fall. Get ready for a weekend of live performances and opportunities to meet your favorite podcasters.
Hello, people of Earth!
Now Hear This will feature podcasting titans like me, Scott Aukerman, doing Comedy Bang Bang Live, in addition to How Did This Get Made, WTF with Marc Maron, with special guest Lauren Lapkus, Brilliant Idiots, and more being announced all the time, including plenty more Earwolf and non-Earwolf favorites.
Lock the gate!
It's all happening in Anaheim, California, October 28th through the 30th. You'll get Halloween off. Don't worry. Buy your tickets now and get all the details at NowHearThisFest.com.
This has been an Earwolf production, executive produced by Scott Aukerman and Chris Bannon. For more information and content, visit Earwolf.com.
Mother's Day is almost here, and you can get her the most beautiful time-tested gift around. A watch she can wear every day for Movement. Whether mom's into classic dress watches, rare and refined ceramics, or tried-and-true bestsellers, Movement has something she'll love. And right now, you can save big on the best Mother's Day gift ever with up to 50% off site-wide during Movement's Mother's Day sale at MVMT.com. Again, that's up to 50% off at MVMT.com.